Welcome back to Reflections, your host Jorge Gonzalez. My guest today is Leah Dominus, the author of a book called Us According to Them. Really recommend. It's going to make you think and analyze and struggle with who we are, whether you are a mainlander or visitor coming to Puerto Rico or a Puerto Rican. I think we all, when we visit Germany, we're trying to see who are they like. You know, I made the trip to Iran or to Vietnam. You know, what makes them click? What's different? How did they achieve what they've achieved? And and what are the challenges they have? So it's a fantastic book, very very carefully researched and I think well balanced and also what I think as the first question, which is the chapter that you like the most, that really surprised you? There are a lot of things that I had never thought of or heard before. But so I just, from your point of view, which chapter kind of was the most, the most fun that you really say, this chapter I think really was surprising when I researched it and when I put it together. Which one do you think?
Wow. To me, the one that represents better the rest of the book, if I were just going to read one, I would recommend number five, which is on the onset of the relationship between colonizers and colonized, or maybe not. I don't know. The morality one also was very enlightening to me because we were being judged by foreigners with their Puritan, which was mostly, because most of the authors came from New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, which is very Puritan area of the U.S. And in the book, I also discussed that mindset that they had and why they were seeing what they saw. So it's not only what they say, but what was in their mind before they came, why they reacted to us that way, and what they actually said, what was their story about us. I think probably those two, and the one about colonialism too. And if you notice, I come with this idea of naming the chapters, which are all different themes, with some phrase that was inside one of the chapter. It's a quote from someone in the chapter that kind of describes the rest of the chapter. And trying to make it fun.
There are what, 18 chapters?
There are 19. Well, 18, yes. 18 chapters. 18 chapters. Because there are different themes. One is on politics. One is on colonialism per se. One is in the relationship between the two, what they say about poverty. The one about women, I enjoyed a lot, too, because, you know, it's one of these things that they said very nice things. Some said very nice thing about women of Puerto Rico. They were kind of enchanted, many of them. But others saw them as disgusting also. So that's the thing. The book doesn't have, I mean, it has all kind of different opinions, and I show you all. I didn't keep anything to me. I just bring examples of everything. I like the one about the laziness, the so-called lazy Puerto Rican. I like that a lot because I like to break those myths that we were so lazy. And also I like a lot also the one on food. There is one about, let me see how I call it. They want rice and beans first, is the title. Food, drinks, and smokes. Because their opinions on us went everywhere. I mean, the music, they talk about our music. There's a chapter on music and entertainment and the values. The one on relationships between families and friends and strangers is really, really rich, as well as the generosity chapter, because many of them were very impressed by, even in the most poor circumstances in terms of poverty, material poverty, the spiritual poverty was over that. And they received, you know, expressions of generosity that they couldn't believe. People who had nothing gave them whatever little they had.
So I love the story.
The what, Jack Delano?
Well, sorry, this person, mm-hmm. I don't remember. Uh-huh. I don't remember who the person was, but he went into this hut. I think it was raining, and they went into this hut, and they were explaining, you know, how difficult life was, and the person was a cane, sugar cane worker, and couldn't work, and so they really didn't have anything, and they had one hen, and so they said every once in a while this hen would give us a couple eggs. Other than that, well, you know, it's what people give us, and a little bit when the bate, you know, maybe the
and they had a lot of kids. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so they...
Well, that's Jack Delano and Jack and Irene Delano. That story belongs to them.
I'm going to ask you about the other
one. That story, every time I read it, I cry.
Okay, so let me tell the story.
I thought you were...
No.
Okay, go ahead, tell them.
No. So they leave the hut and get in their car, and this little one of the kids, and it probably doesn't tell you how many kids there were, but two, someone were in the background. But the little kid comes with a little bag, and they open up, and there are two eggs. And the statement was, we eat eggs when this old hen finally produces two of them. So the only thing they really had, other than, you know, what people gave them, and was these two eggs, and they gave these two eggs to this person's getting in a car, which for them must have been
nothing to them.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, that's a fantastic story.
No, that story is my favorite in the whole book.
Yeah, I'm gonna Well, you liked all the books. You're just like having a child. It's hard to say which child you like.
Yes.
It's a tougher question.
And there are many things that I never wrote. I have them for publishing separately. I still have stuff that I haven't published about it.
About
this same research.
Well, you know, one of the ones, I'm going to give you a couple, you know, one of the ones I enjoyed was which is something I've always, you know, suffered with in terms of it's gambling. As a whole thing on gambling, and of course, as you said, in that particular period, which is more where most of the the texts that you refer to, the research, they're from Puritan and missionaries and teachers, you know, and so they came, and gambling was bad, you know, and it was, you know, where they were from, it was banned, and you know, so they come here, and there's cockfighting, and there's lottery, illegal lottery, bolita, illegal lottery, and boxing and all, and. You know, I always suffer with some of these sports like cockfighting and boxing.
Yeah,
I feel really bad because I had never been to a cockfight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you explain that there's that we had bullfights, but it was completely compared to cockfighting, that you could not hurt the bull, and the bull couldn't hurt the
it was sanitized.
It was very, very, very sanitized. And then we have boxing, which of course it has its rules, etc. But I always wonder whether it should be really banned, you know, like we try to ban gambling, but cockfighting, and yet I continuously watch good boxing matches, and I follow some of the Comando Serrano.
I'm from Isabela. It's the town of the cockfighting.
Ah, see.
So my uncles all had
Did you go to them?
Yes, I have.
And you like them?
It's entertaining. I mean, women usually watch it from the upper part, so we don't get all dressed.
You don't get into the betting?
Huh?
You don't get into the
betting? I never bet. I never like that. But I can see why it's a cultural thing. And as a culture, it should be protected in a way. Maybe, I don't know. It's one of those things. We are seeing it with the eyes of today, but it's something that came much, much earlier when people didn't think of the animals. As many galleros are going to tell you, those cocks are born to fight. They're going to fight. No, if you put them to fight or not, they're going to fight each other and kill each other anyway.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Yeah, but they put razors into the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But you also say about the kite, there's a story.
Yes. Flying kites with little razors.
Yes. And then you have to cut the kite of the other.
Yes.
But anyway, the whole gambling thing is always interesting as a development of a culture like ours. And one of the things I've always found ironic is that at the same time, it's almost like alcohol and smoking. The government doesn't want you to overdo gambling, yet it's the main source of gambling.
Yeah, and it's also a source of hope. cockfighting is a source of hope, especially in those first years. For someone who had no chance to get any money ever, but for what they work, the chance is in a fight, betting and winning and gambling, and that's a way to get money.
But that whole, you know, scene from at that point of view, and then you bring it forward.
Yes. To today. Yes.
Where the U.S. has made it illegal, cockfighting, and our governor, is in favor of. But as you say, you can do cockfighting so long as you don't get into what's called interstate commerce.
Exactly.
You have to be a completely, domestic cockfighting with your food and with your cock and the other.
Yes.
So it's that's an article. I mean, that's a paragraph, and that's one of many, many.
Yeah.
They're all.
Yeah.
One of the things you cite throughout all these chapters certain people, and there were four or five that I really enjoyed, and, one is I think it's Jim Cooper.
Ah, yeah, that professor. He taught English in the Colegio Mayagüez
for four years, and he's very perceptive and very, very good throughout not every chapter, but
yeah, he's quoted interesting things about a lot of things. And one of the things I like most of the stories is when he said that how students copied in the tests, and he was like, "Why do you do that?" And they say, "Well, he's my friend. I have to help him. Why shouldn't I help him in his test if he's my friend?" And it couldn't go through his head, that logic. So, yeah, and the pasmo, the one who he's talk about the pasmo, this illness that we have in Puerto Rico that I don't know if you heard it when you were growing, but my family said that thing. Don't go into the from cold to hot or hot to hot fast because you the pasmas. I never met anybody, but it's like an urban legend that can happen. And it's used as an excuse by his students. He used it as an excuse for being absent in a test or something. It's like,
I really enjoyed it because I say, of course, I like the part where it's more positive towards Puerto Rico, of course, than the ones that are.
Of course.
Yeah, but the balance between the two gechetas, he's more romantic towards Puerto Rico because, and then the other one that I enjoyed is Wagenheim, Carl Wagenheim.
Mm-hmm. Wagenheim.
Yeah. And he
spent his life here, I think. Yeah. He married.
Well, one of the things that Lilia does, which is really, I've never seen it before, as besides the bibliography of the books, every book, you know, was that she mentions throughout the thing. But then she has an appendix, which is it gives the complete name of the authors, their
as much information as they could get about them,
their pertinent personal data, and their time in Puerto Rico,
and why they were here, what were they doing here.
So this guy that I just finished mentioning, Wagenheim. Mm-hmm.
Carl Wagenheim.
Let me see what he says about. Mm-hmm. Okay, Carl Wagenheim, 1935. So apparently he's still living.
Exactly. Well, at least when I wrote it, it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Editor, publisher of the newsletter Caribbean Update, a former correspondent for the New York Times, author, translator of several books on Puerto Rico. That's under pertinent personal data. Then time in Puerto Rico, married Puerto Rican Dr. Olga Jimenez and visited frequently afterwards. Mm-hmm. So he lived in.
Yes, she's the one who wrote about Grito de Lares. She had a book about Grito de Lares. Olga Jimenez de Wagenheim.
And one person that I also enjoyed a lot is, I'm going to see if I can buy them. And this is because I like to read the books themselves. This is Rexford Tugwell. I've always been very Rexford Tugwell, and it says an economist with a PhD and a writer, last American governor of Puerto Rico, and was the governor of Puerto Rico in 1941 to 46. That was the time he spent. And he has in his book that 1940 something. He reflects on Puerto Ricans.
Yeah, that's his memoir about his years here in Puerto Rico. One thing that I did is I wanted to collect books that were not researched books in the sense of an analysis or something like that. It had to be something about their own personal experience.
That's why
I use memoirs mostly.
Right.
And whatever part that was not done with academic intention, for example, when they were writing. Right. Why? Because I wanted them to be honest.
Right, right.
And my logic behind this book is also that because these books were written in English and published in the United States, except for one or two that were published here in English too, the books, they thought, I think, this is in my head, that the authors thought that no Puerto Rican is going to read this. So
they were frank, can be honest. They were frank
they
and honest.
They can go ahead.
Grossly frank and honest sometimes.
And you didn't see the pictures in the books. That's a possibility of another publication
just with the pictures. A lot of the books are just photographic books.
Yes. But, I mean, they, in the cover of the book, there is a, this is inspired by a real photograph that was in the book, was by a soldier. I think his name was Stevens, or he was from Massachusetts. But he was a Massachusetts soldier. And he, this is a real picture. Imagine a picture in which you see like a colmado, like a little store in a dirt road in some place in the island. There is a jíbaro, a countryside man with no shoes, very humble. There is a pig and there is a horse. And he wrote, he brought in his book under it, Three of a Kind. Mm. So when I read that, I began to shout, I cried, I made a fuss at home, and I decided this is going to be the cover of the book.
Three of a Kind, the pig, the horse, the small horse, which they call, I love that. I love the one, though, because I love horses, you know, and they call them ponies because they were small. And so, some of them criticize them tremendously, and then some of them were
incredible,
the strength and what they were able to do. And only those were useful in terms of getting through the trails and going and carrying the kinds of things.
They were not afraid of walking.
You know, but in terms of this picture, you know, I circled. Of course, the poor listeners are. But I circled. You said barefoot, but I circled.
Well, the real one is barefoot.
It looks like he has sneakers.
That's a rendition made by a Puerto Rican artist.
It should have the boots. You know, I mean, I have a farm in Calle, and if you go there during the weekend, you know, at once I've changed, and I have my la mancha de plátano, you know, my shirts and my pants are just completely stained with the mancha de plátano, the plantain stains. And then I will invariably have my boots, you know, the rubber boots that go almost to the knees. And I put a little circle on it. There's something missing here.
And that pig is too fat for the one that was in the real picture, too. It was not a home. It was like a store. But anyway, this is his rendition. And I wanted it to be a Puerto Rican artist. And his name is Felix Disla. He's in Instagram and all that thing, and he lives in New Jersey. So I went with his rendition.
You have to be really analytical to take a look at the pig and put a circle
on. I had to fight. I want a three of a kind larger, but it didn't work.
Analytical is a nice word for me. Some people would use another word.
I got it.
Listen, but Gwen, we're run out of time in the second segment.
Yes.
Can you believe it? We've already done two segments out of three. And so we run out of time. The person I have as my guest is Lija Domenic, a professor and an author, a researcher. And this is Reflections. This is host Jorge Gonzalez. We'll be right back. I have a couple of other authors, and we could be the whole afternoon talking about this book. But,
no, we can't, but we'll try to do as much as we can.
We'll be right back after the pause.